Good morning again. We are continuing on in the book of Ruth. We're going to be in Ruth chapter 2, if you want to start turning that direction in the Old Testament. As I was putting the message together for today, there's a couple of sayings or thoughts that kept coming to my head, and you've probably heard them before. Maybe you even said them. Have you ever said that that you were in the right place at the right time? That there was a coincidence, or was it happenstance that you were there? Did you have some good fortune? Or maybe you turned it around. Maybe it's a different time. Maybe there was something you got caught in, and you were in the wrong place at the wrong time. I'm implying that there was maybe bad luck, or it was fate, or accidental. When something amazing happens in our life, we're very quick to rightly say that the hand of God was certainly on us. But do we say the same thing when something bad happens to us? Does it mean that if something bad happens to us that somehow now that that in our life the hand of God is off of us? Like he takes it on and takes it off? Last week in chapter 1 in Ruth, we saw a pretty grim picture. We saw Naomi. She lost her homeland, had to leave because her husband decided they were going to leave the famine. She loses her homeland. Then she ends up not only having to bury her husband, but bury her two sons as well. She's completely discouraged and bitter in life. In fact, she's so bitter that she renames herself Bitter, the name Mara. That's how pessimistic she is, how downtrodden she is. And she's so pessimistic that she decides, I'm just going to pack up my bags and go back home, go back to Bethlehem. And when she arrives in Bethlehem, she's so downtrodden, she's so beat down that her friends don't even recognize her. That's the place that she's in. And in the eyes of Naomi, she believes that she's a cursed woman. That's her position. That's where she views her life. That's how she views God. Ruth, who's her daughter-in-law, has come home to Bethlehem with her. Ruth could have stayed in Moab. That's her native country. She could have stayed there and had started a new life. Instead, Ruth decides to come home with Naomi to go back to Bethlehem, and she pledges to stay with Naomi even unto death. Now, Ruth was married to one of Naomi's sons for 10 years, but even after 10 years, she has no children. Having no children back then, Ruth, it would be devastating to a woman in that culture, in that day, to be unmarried, to be widowed, and have no children. To some, maybe some people around her, that would say that Ruth was a cursed woman. Ruth, I'm sure, believed that she at one time was a cursed woman. Because as we learned last week, the country of Moab, the nation of Moab, was cursed by God from the very beginning. From the time that Moab was born and how he was born, the country then became a bitter enemy of Israel, of God's people. And Moab not only rejected the one true God, but actually fought against him, worked against the people of God. And for that, God did curse Moab. So they walk. So Ruth and Naomi decide they're going to walk back to Jerusalem, about 70 miles or so, and they make this long journey, two women together, and they do it alone. And when they get there, they get to Bethlehem, they go to Naomi's old house, the one that she had left behind, and they set up house there. But they're in the house. These are two women that are completely at the end of their rope. They're without hope. These are two women who have come back to Bethlehem, but society views them as cursed women. Now, let's remember, Bethlehem, we talked about it last week a little bit. It's a small, very small village. There's actually, most scholars believe, about 200 people in Bethlehem. So everybody's going to know everybody in Bethlehem. Most people are going to be related to each other, and everyone's going to know Naomi and what her situation was. Everybody remembers, everybody talks, that Naomi left 10 years ago or so, and now she's back. And the relatives there are going to be fully aware of the situation. Notice this. We didn't mention this last week, but notice that when she does come back to Bethlehem, to this very small village with all her relatives and everything, no one comes to help. No one shows up to help out. For these women, life went from bad to worse, and now it's gotten even worse, even though they've come home. Most of the time, if we go someplace new, I don't know if you've ever moved before or maybe been transferred to a job or moved across town or whatever, whenever we have a new place that we go to, there's a sense of hope there. It's kind of like a clean slate. You can start over, change some things. But that's not true for Naomi. And it looks, at least initially, like it's that's not true for Ruth either. They're all alone. There's no one to help them. Their friends, it's depressing. Their friends, their relatives ignore them. There's nothing, or at least so it would seem to them right now. So when we pick up the story, we're gonna see here that Ruth decides she's going to set out and find something to eat. The barley, at the end of chapter 1, we know that the barley harvest is about to begin. And so Ruth is going to head out into the fields to see if she can gather some grain to eat. Understand, though, that when for a person like Ruth to go out into these fields to glean, the most that she could probably hope for is maybe a couple handfuls of grain. She hopes that she can get just enough grain to come home and provide a very small meal for her and Naomi. She's going to head out to work all day in the fields just so she can have one meal. It's pretty grim. But if we stop there before we get into chapter 2, we ask the question, where is God in all of this? Where is his hand? Just earlier in chapter 1, Ruth makes one of the most powerful statements of faith in all of Scripture. This is why this chapter in chapter 2 in Ruth is one of my favorite chapters in the entire Bible. The Bible's full of just rich, awesome, encouraging, convicting, guiding scriptures. But this chapter in particular is especially impactful, I think, for each one of us. But she makes this amazing declaration of faith. She declares that she's going to follow God no matter what. It doesn't matter. She'll even follow God if it kills her, she says. Even if things don't get better, she's still going to follow God. She's going to leave the gods, plural, small g, of Moab, the false gods, and follow the one true God, big G, the God of Israel, the God of the universe. And I would submit to you that when we start looking at Ruth's faith, I would challenge, I'm not sure, certainly not me, but I don't know of a single person that has a greater faith today than Ruth had then. And you would expect that a faith like that would keep Ruth out of this desperation. One of the things that drives me up the wall, I hear this in Christianity occasionally, somebody will be having a hard time in troubles or something like that, a tough time in life. And they'll go to a brother or sister in the church body, and they'll, you know, explain the situation that they're in. And sometimes this canned, cliche, knee-jerk response to the person in trouble is, oh, well, you just need to have more faith. Really? Have you read the book of Ruth? You look at the amount of faith that Ruth had, but you look at the situation that she was in and the circumstances that surrounded her. And you would think, just at first glance, you would think that God would really honor this kind of commitment, right? But for Ruth, so far, life doesn't get any better. Ruth is hungry. She's starving. And she's so desperate that she's willing to go out and work an entire day of manual labor just for one small meal. I'm sure you've seen it before. I certainly have. You've seen somebody who's walked away from Christianity, who's walked away from God because times got tough. And sometimes in our human thinking, it's hard to blame them sometimes when something comes upon somebody that's so troubling. You might even look at Naomi and say, well, you know, it's hard to blame Naomi for her bitterness and her where she's at based on all these things that have happened in these 10 years. Maybe you're one of those persons. Maybe you walked away from Christianity at one point because something went wrong in your life, something terrible, something rotten. Maybe you even thought that there was something that was inexcusable. How could God allow blank to happen? And maybe that turned you from God. Perhaps the question here, as we go through Ruth and we examine our own lives, perhaps the question is not, where is God in all of this? Because we know from Scripture, and we may know in our heads, may doubt in our hearts, but we know from Scripture that God is everywhere all the time. That's just the nature of God. That's who He is. That's unchangeable. Perhaps maybe a better question then is, what has God planned? What is God's plan? As we go through Ruth each week, we're going to have a different sister come up and read our text for us. So this morning, Debbie's going to come up and read Ruth chapter 2 for us.
Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth and of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant in charge of the reapers replied, "She is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." Thus she came and has remained from the morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink what the servants draw." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work, and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me, and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here that you may eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate, and was satisfied, and had some left. When she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord, who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and to the dead." Again Naomi said to her, "This man is our relative. He is one of our closest relatives." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You should stay close to my servants until they have finished all my harvest.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, so that others do not fall upon you in another field." So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
What does God have planned? Where is God in all of this? Good questions. Let's kind of tuck those questions right off to the side there. Keep those questions in our mind as we unpack this scripture. Another one, like we talked about last week, another question is, we know that all of scripture points towards Christ. From Genesis to Revelation, it's God's plan of redemption. And in the Old Testament, everything points to Christ. And everything in the New Testament either talks about Christ in the current day then or points back to Christ. So as we read through this, where is God? What does he have planned? And how does this text teach us about who Christ is? Let's sort of unpack it. If we start off in verse 3. Ruth finds herself in the field of Boaz, who's a distant relative of Naomi. Now, when we first glance at this, right, it may not sound like much that Ruth ends up in this field, but in reality, it's absolutely an incredible coincidence that she just happens to end up in this particular field. And it's also important that Boaz would even visit the field that day. It's not uncommon for somebody during that time who owns a field to stay away for weeks on end, maybe even months. But in this particular day, just happens to visit that particular field. A little bit of backstory here. So in Israel at the time, there were clans, and several clans made up a tribe. There were 12 tribes in Israel, and each clan was initially given land when the Israelites were brought into the Promised Land. When they conquered the area of Palestine, God divided up the land amongst all these clans. And the land that a clan received could not be sold. It was supposed to be handed down through the family member to family member. And the ownership of these lands was like a patchwork of fields. I mean, it was very rare that one family would own two fields that were right next to each other. And there weren't any fences. How they would differentiate where the field started and ended is they would put stones in the ground. And unless you were familiar with the area, you wouldn't know where a field started and where it ended. And when they planted the grain, they would plant over a huge area across the different fields. And to an outsider, it would actually look like one gigantic field. Again, you couldn't tell unless you knew, unless you were from that area. And Ruth is not. She's a foreigner. She's from a different country. Moab is bitter enemies of Israel. It's not like Ruth visited Israel or Bethlehem and was able to figure this out. So it's incredible that she would actually end up in Boaz's field. If you walked across these fields, if you weren't familiar with the area, you wouldn't know if you were walking from one field to the next or changing owners. Now, and this is important, especially in the exchange that goes on with Ruth and the servant and with Boaz as well. The chance that Ruth just happened to end up in the field of Boaz is highly against the odds, highly against, and almost an impossibility. She set out. Naomi didn't go with her. In fact, we can tell from the text that Ruth actually comes back, and she still doesn't know, after meeting and talking with Boaz, still doesn't know who he is. You talk about the being in the exact place at the right time. This is it. There's no way that she could have known who was who and what was what. And Ruth appears to be completely unaware of the, quote, coincidence that's happening here. She's unaware of the guidance that God is giving her to find this location. She's just trying to get by. She's just trying to find some food. Question, is this where the guidance, God's guidance for Ruth begins? Was it here where God's hand all of a sudden came upon Ruth? Maybe God's hand came on her when they were walking the 70 miles from Moab to Bethlehem. Was it then? Or maybe it was when Ruth decided to stay with Naomi and she makes this declaration. Is that when God's guidance, God's hand came upon Ruth? Maybe it was 10 years ago when Ruth decided to marry Naomi's son. Was that when God's hand came upon her? How far back has the hand of God been on Ruth? Is the hand of God with you during good times? Or maybe has God brought you tough times as well? When I look back on my life so far, recently, certainly I can see where God's hand was on me. But if you keep walking back in your life, where did God's hand first come upon you? I know for me, when I think about it, and I started thinking about more and more this week, I started going back and through the Navy and then back into college, and now I'm in high school, and I skip over my salvation, and now I'm a non-believer, and I'm in complete rebellion, and I'm in high school, and now I'm in junior high school. Now I'm in elementary school. I can't remember, with 20/20 hindsight, even in rebellion, I can't remember a time when God's hand wasn't on me. And so why would, when we look at Ruth here, why would the hand of God leave us in difficult times? Why would that happen? Ruth arrives in this field, and she wants to glean some grain for her and Naomi. At the time, Israel's law mandated that a farmer or a harvester had to leave some food for the poor. And the poor were allowed to follow the reapers behind and pick up whatever was dropped or left behind. That was gleaning. And by law, they were only allowed to pass through the field. The harvester was only allowed to pass through the field one time. They couldn't go back. If they dropped something, they had to leave it. And this, we see this prescribed in two really very clear scriptures. Leviticus 19 told them, "Now when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest, nor shall you glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God." And then in Deuteronomy 24, it's repeated in a slightly different way. It says, "When you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back and get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." It's an interesting something to contemplate, that then you were supposed to leave things behind. Why? So that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. Today, I love watching this. The combines that we have today, the mechanical combines, are very efficient when they go through the fields, picking up almost 100% of the grain in the field. Back then, though, the harvest was all done by hand, and a good field worker would rarely leave anything behind, any stalks, any grain, anything like that. Most of the grain then that would be gathered by the poor would be scattered all over the place, very tiny bits all over. And it was difficult for the poor to come and glean, because they would just be picking up individual grains as they would go. And the law that said you could only pass through the field once, this was part of their support structure. This was, if you only went through the field once, there was going to be enough left behind by human error that the poor would be able to sustain themselves. And Ruth appears here in the text, appears to be very aware of this law, but maybe because she's an ethnic outsider, she decides to ask permission. By law, she can go and glean, but she's asking permission, and maybe she thought that the supervisor or the person in charge of the field would deny her, or the owner of the field would deny her simply because she wasn't Israeli. She was outside. Technically, she wasn't under the law because she wasn't an Israeli. She wasn't a child of God or one of the chosen people of God. And she asks to glean and gather. That's an important part there. Glean and gather. Gleaning is collecting. Gleaning is bringing it all together, making little piles in the field. But to gather means to pick it up and take it. And so she's asking permission to take what she has found. If you look in verses 4 through 6, you see Boaz, you see an interesting thing that Boaz does. Verse 4, it says, "Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, said, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you." When was the last time your boss came up to you and said, may the Lord be with you? This shows how Boaz treats his workers and how they view him. In verse 1, Boaz is called a man of great wealth. That word wealth, that particular word wealth in the Hebrew, yes, it does mean that there's financial wealth there. But that particular word is a military word, and it carries along with it the image of nobility and integrity. In fact, some translations, instead of using a man of great wealth, they will say that he was a great man. And so we see this as Boaz, how he treats his workers and how they respond to him. We see the character of who Boaz is. And so Ruth arrives at the field and asks permission to glean. She would have had to work the field and pick up all these little these little pieces of grain and make these piles. But she doesn't want to take anything until she has permission. She would be able to glean, sure, but to take, to gather, she wants permission. This is, again, showing the character of Ruth. And this field supervisor, it says that the servant, that particular word in the Hebrew, that word servant, it means a youth who serves. So this, it was a young man. He was probably 18, 19 years old or something like that. Maybe because he was young, he wasn't able to make that decision. But either way, he waits for the boss. He's got to get clearance from the top in order to let this Moabite woman take out of the field. And Ruth could have, by law, since she was a widow, could have just jumped in, but she waits. She's showing her true character. She's a woman that her best hope is just to get enough grain so that she can make one small meal. And surely she understands, if she's asking the question, the owner could say no. She could walk away empty-handed. She could be wasting her time here. And she wouldn't even have one meal that day. It's now it's up to Boaz. Boaz is going to make the determination whether she gets to take the grain home with her. And when Boaz arrives, he asks, who does this woman belong to? He doesn't ask who the woman is. Rather, he seeks, who does she belong to? Bethlehem, again, was very small. And Boaz, I'm sure, knows all the locals. Who is this woman? Does she have the right to be in this field? She could be a servant of somebody else. And again, they don't know they may not know exactly where the boundaries of the fields are. So she may be just in the wrong field. She should be serving her master. Or maybe, who is her master? Why is she eking out this living? Why is she scrounging for food? Who is her master? Who is taking care of her? Obviously, again, everybody knows that she's not an Israeli. But we learn that Boaz has heard. He knows of Naomi, and he knows of Ruth's dedication to Naomi. We know that he's impressed. He's impressed that a Moabite woman would treat an Israeli that way. You have to understand, it was a bitter, they were enemies to the core. False gods, one true God. Pagan wickedness, all of this going on in Moab. Supposedly the chosen people, the people of God. There was problems going on in Israel for sure, but bitter enemies. But Boaz is impressed that a Moabite woman would treat an Israeli that way. He also knows that Ruth is under no obligation to Naomi. She has chosen to follow Naomi. Ruth could have had a better life, but she left her mother and her father and her people and her land, her native land. And this kindness, Boaz knows that this kindness that Ruth is displaying to Naomi is significant. It's also significant because of Naomi's age and Ruth's position, that Ruth is now the sole breadwinner of the family. If they're going to eat, it's going to be up to Ruth. And so he has this conversation with this young field supervisor, this servant in charge, it says in verse 6. And then Boaz's response here, again asking the question, where is God? What does he have planned? Boaz, first of all, he uses the term daughter with her. This is significant. It's a term of endearment. To call a Moabite woman a daughter, that's significant. It's also the exact same word that Naomi uses to refer to Ruth. And what Boaz does here, he goes above and beyond, over and above what he's required to do. And also because he calls her daughter, there's an implication here, or a suggestion, that Naomi and Boaz are about the same age. So we're starting to learn that there's a pretty good age difference between Ruth and Boaz. Where is God in all of this? What does he have planned? When we look at the hand of God, we see in our lives and other people's lives, we see a constant protection. And we see it here in the scripture as well, because Boaz turns around and he tells the workers to back off. Normally, the workers would be instructed to tell those that were gleaning to stay very far behind those that are harvesting. But Boaz creates this situation where Ruth is equal to all the workers. He insists that she work with the other women. This is a protection. Naomi even refers to it. You know, this is a dangerous thing for Ruth to do. She's desperate. They need food. In fact, he goes above and beyond that. He not just equal, but he asks her to join at lunch, to join in lunch with the workers. And he even secretly goes and tells the workers, look, leave some extra stuff behind. He's incredibly kind. Why is he doing this? Notice in verse 12, he said, may the Lord, he's telling Ruth, May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Boaz knows he's not taking any credit for this. He's the agent that God has provided in order to bless these two women. We see a humility in Boaz. And Boaz gives Ruth way more freedom than what would ever be expected. Ruth goes from being an outsider, a Moabite with no rights whatsoever, to an insider with extra privileges, just like that. And before, others would be in their total right to exclude her, maybe even push her around. But now, not anymore. now that Boaz has allowed her to find refuge, no one would dare exclude her. Even more, he instructs them to serve Ruth. And they're, like I said, they're instructed to secretly provide for her as well. Verse 14, Boaz offers this amazing lunch. Actually, when you first read it, you're like, bread and vinegar. But actually, when I did the research, for some reason, it was like a gourmet lunch. It was very high end. And for some reason back then, the bread dipping in vinegar, and I'm not entirely sure what kind of vinegar it was, but it was a very cool and refreshing thing for the workers. Boaz treats his workers very, very well, and he brings Ruth into this gourmet meal as well. But also, don't miss this. It's spanned out over a few verses. But again, Ruth shows her character. She doesn't eat everything. She doesn't just, you know, stuff it all in, and it's all about me. She eats some, but then she saves some for Naomi. She shows her character. There's no doubt that Ruth was hungry. She could have stuffed herself to the rafters, but that's not Ruth's character. She saved some for her mother-in-law. So one question here, maybe you've asked it, maybe not, is why doesn't Boaz just hire her? Why doesn't he just make her one of his workers? He could just hire Ruth, and then the two ladies would be taken care of, and that'd be it. She'd have a job. It's certainly a possibility, but as we see as this unfolds, God has much greater plans. Sometimes in life, the obvious solution to us is right in front of us, and we think, Lord, why don't you, this is so obvious. Why don't you give it to me? Why don't you provide in this way? But the obvious solution here is way below what God has planned. He's got a much greater plan. In our lives, we get frustrated, don't we? Because we think God's timing is off. You know, God, why can't you, you're too slow. Why, the solution is right here, right in front of me. I can see it. Why can't I have it? But most of the time, every single time, if we really look at it, God has greater plans than just what's right in front of our eyes. By allowing Ruth to continue to glean, Boaz is able to give Ruth and Naomi far above what some just nice gesture would be, or even just hiring Ruth. He goes above and beyond. Let me explain here. So a hired worker would get about 1 pound of grain as payment for one day's work, 1 pound. Remember, Ruth is coming in here thinking, if I could just get a couple handfuls, then we would have one meal today. But the average worker gets 1 pound, and if Boaz hires her, then that's what she gets. But instead, what she brings home is an ephah. This is about 30 pounds, 30 times a day's wage. And Naomi is very surprised. I mean, think about it. Mother-in-law is sitting at home. Daughter-in-law goes out in a very dangerous situation to try and scrap for some food. Doesn't come back with 2 handfuls, but comes back with this giant sack of grain. Naomi's very surprised, and we read in Scripture here that Ruth is not, because of her humility, I believe, she's not really even totally aware of the generosity that's been poured down on her. And when we read, it's not just one bag. It's not just 30 pounds. It says that Ruth is allowed to glean through the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, through the entire harvest. It usually took about a month for the barley harvest and another month for the wheat harvest. So she has 2 months' worth. And every day she would be able to bring home, the way Boaz has set all this up, she'd be able to bring home about 30 pounds of grain. And so just do the math real quick. Ruth works 6 days a week, because you can't work on the Sabbath, right? She works 6 days a week, excuse me, for 8 weeks. She's going to bring home 50 bags each of 30 pounds of grain. That's 1,500 pounds of grain. If she was just a hired worker, she would have gotten 1 pound a day. She would have brought home 50 pounds. Not two handfuls, not 50 pounds, 1,500 pounds. Not only do Ruth and Naomi have all that they need to eat for the entire year, but guess what? They have a small business now. They have a storehouse full of grain. They can sell this grain, the extra grain. They started out on a starvation diet, and now they've got their own business. They have a huge income in addition to all the food that's been provided for them. They started out hoping for a handful of grain, and they ended up with it piled to the ceiling. God has bigger plans than the obvious solution. So what if the obvious, what if God had answered Ruth's only expectation and just given her two handfuls of grain? What if Ruth had gone out to the field and got hired as an employee? What if God answered that expectation or that prayer? Would have provided? God went way beyond that and blessed, through Boaz, blessed Ruth and Naomi with more than they even imagined that they were going to get. Do you think that God's timing in your life is terrible? Do you sit there and the obvious solution is right in front of you, but you think that God is silent? Are you working hard but you know that there's no way to get ahead, and you believe that God is silent? God is everywhere all the time, and He has a plan. He is God. And so the question is not where is God, the question is what does God have planned? Many times we don't know, and that's where faith comes in. Trusting. Remember back in when we went through the Gospel of Mark, man comes up to Jesus and wanting his son healed, and as Jesus is questioning him, he cries out and he says, "Yes, Lord, I believe. Help me with my unbelief." And when we did a word study on that, if you remember, we saw that those two words were different. One, belief, yes, I believe, means yes, I believe. He called him Lord. He said, "You are the Christ. You are the Messiah. I recognize you as Christ." But then he says, "Help me with my unbelief." It seems like a contradictory statement. That second word, though, the belief, means trust. So yes, I believe in you, Jesus. I believe who you are. Help me trust you, because I don't. And it wasn't Christ's fault, obviously. He was crying out because of his lack of trust. What does God have planned for your life?